Hello, Cubs fans. This is David in Alexandria, Virginia, and this episode of the Ivy Envy podcast is brought to you by Ivy Envy Patreon supporters like me. You can learn more at patreon.com/IvyEnvy.
Hi, and thanks for downloading this, the 416th episode of the Ivy Envy podcast. On this episode, we're going to talk about the Cubs series win over the Mets. Jake was back to being Jake. The Cubs had some issues with hitting with runners in scoring position, and do the Cubs have a closer problem? We will cover those topics. Oh, yeah, and the Cubs made a trade today that strengthened the bullpen and the overall pitching staff. We'll talk about that, too. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by the other two hosts of this podcast.
Hey, it's Andy
and Kurt.
So Andy and I had the opportunity to go up to Chicago for Tuesday's game. So I kind of think that this conversation may lean a little bit heavy on that game. And that was a frustrating game. And today was kind of a nice palate cleanser, I think. Did you kind of feel that way, Andy, after witnessing Tuesday night's game?
Especially, I mean, since Rizzo had such a rough game in the game we were at on Tuesday. And so to see him do what he did in today's game, I think palate cleanser is a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah. while we're on the topic of us being up there, I do want to say ParkWiz is amazing. And we do get a percentage of your ParkWiz purchases, but seriously, I used it last night for the first time at Wrigley this year, and lots of the parking lots or, you know, different places you could park were $40 to $60. We got a nice little place. What would you say, Andy? Like a 10-15 minute walk from Wrigley? I mean, it wasn't bad at all.
Probably about 15.
Yeah, and it was $17, easy in, easy out. Didn't have to worry about parking somewhere illegal and getting ticketed or towed. We didn't overpay. I just think that ParkWiz is a really good service. That's why we have that affiliate relationship with them, because I think it's especially for Cubs fans, if you park in that neighborhood and go to games, it's parking can be a nightmare there. But go to ivmv.com. We have a ParkWiz widget on the right side of the page. I've also used it for parking in other cities, parking at O'Hare, parking downtown. I used it when I was downtown for the podcast awards a couple weeks ago, and I paid $16. And if I hadn't used ParkWiz, it would have been $30 to park downtown. So, I mean, it's easy.
I used it. In Denver and got 24 hours of parking for $6.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's great for unfamiliar cities too, where you never know what the parking situation is going to be like in a city.
Right.
And at least if you have that peace of mind for $6.
Yeah, to get whatever it taken care of ahead of time. I've used it in St. Louis. Go to our site and go to ivmv.com. And like I said, it's on the right side of the page. You just pick the dates you want or games or whatever. So super easy. And if you want to use it, I think if you email me, I think I can give you a referral thing for $5 or $10 off your first reservation. So the tailgate in Milwaukee, that's this upcoming Saturday. All the tickets are sold. There's a waiting list in case people cancel. There's going to be 99 of us, and it's going to be awesome. We'll be hanging out in the parking lot for about 3 hours before the game. And if you're not able to go, then pay attention to our public Ivy Envy Facebook page and our Twitter, because I'll do some Facebook Live and Periscoping from the event probably. So you can find us at ivmv.com/Facebook, and we are at IVMV on Twitter. You'll be able to see our Periscopes from Twitter. And if the rotation doesn't change, we will get to see Lester on Saturday, I believe. And
beautiful.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. I think. everyone's going to get
to... My hopes up now, Corey.
What's that?
Better be Lester. You got my hopes up now.
I know. So everyone will get the opportunity to hang out with the ever elusive Kurt. He does exist, folks. This isn't like a robot that just sits in on the...
Oh, man.
And Andy will be off Pokemoning somewhere around the parking lot. So you may see him in passing.
Yeah.
That dude, man.
I heard Bernie shows up on the app sometimes. So I think that's the best place to catch him.
Imagine driving in Chicago, lots of traffic, and then the passenger says, "Oh God, what is that?" And you think there's something in the road, maybe, or somebody's about to sideswipe us, but no, it was like a rare Pokemon.
But there was something in the road, Corey. There was. I saw it on my phone, and I caught it.
That's awesome. I learned so much about Pokemon, and it actually sounds somewhat interesting. I can't really wrap my head around it, which I'm kind of intrigued by things that I can't wrap my head around, which in all honesty is a lot of the world.
It's most things.
But yeah, then you're going to be let down. I mean, that's kind of like your expectations are high, and then once you wrap your head around it, it's going to be a letdown.
Yeah. Yeah. Which that's a lot of my life too. So, I guess
I finally figured this out.
All right. So we have a trade to talk about. Let's do that before we talk about the Mets series. Dan Vogel back, which we start having to call him Vogel back. Now he's traded. So can we just on this episode, call him Vogelbach for old time's sake?
Yeah, I'd say so.
Okay. So Vogelbach, he was traded to the Mariners. Paul Blackburn went with him. And in return, the Cubs got Mike Montgomery and what was the other guy's name?
I want you to say it.
No, I don't. Is it
Jordan Preece?
Preece or Price? I think it's Preece, probably.
I forgot to write it down and I couldn't remember. So do you guys have any thoughts on this trade, just kind of in general?
First of all, pretty inevitable that Vogelbach was going to be moved.
Right.
So I wasn't surprised in that regard. I knew he was going to be gone eventually. I kind of envision, I don't know, him being a part of like a bigger deal. I expected him to be gone. So that was my first thought on the trade.
Yeah, me too. I mean, he makes sense in the American League and there's nowhere for him to play with the Cubs. So yeah, it made sense that he moved and bullpen help is what they needed. So
yeah. Yeah. Like you guys said, he was never going to have a spot on this Cubs roster. And if he did, that meant very, very bad things that we don't want to happen. So I really liked Vogelbach. I interviewed him a couple years ago. He was really nice, very personable. And I think he's a competitor. And I'm really interested to see how he does with the Mariners. And I hope that he's up with them and we get to see him on John Baker Day. I hope he's maybe playing first base for them that day. I would like the opportunity.
That be something?
Yeah, I'd really like to see that. First off, Montgomery. They got Mike Montgomery. He's a lefty reliever. At the same time, has the potential to start. He started quite a few games for the Mariners last year. As far as his what he throws, he has a fastball that sits in the mid-90s. And the interesting thing is with that fastball, he induces a lot of ground balls. His overall ground ball rate is 59%. Which is about 15% higher than the average pitcher. And he has a better than average strikeout rate and a better than average walk rate. And I think that's really good to see from a guy that's early in his career like Montgomery. And I really like this move because of his versatility. He can pitch out of the bullpen and then, perhaps slide into the number five spot if there's an injury or something in the rotation and the Cubs don't do anything else here at the trade deadline as far as the rotation goes. And another reason that I really like this move is that he has years of control. I think the Cubs gained 5 years of control on him. I think that's how.
Wow.
So,
yeah, and he's sort of like on the rise. He's improving.
Right. I really like this move. I mean, to be honest, I had not heard of Mike Montgomery beforehand, so I don't want to act like I've had my eye on him for a while, but like just kind of like in glancing at his numbers and kind of looking at the history that the Cubs have with acquiring pitchers through trade and the history that you know, as far as the front office selecting specific pitchers and Bosio working with those pitchers, it really anybody that this front office wants and is willing to give up, you know, somebody like a Vogelbach for, I'm instantly kind of excited about it.
Yeah, and because of the recent, I mean, this was so fresh, didn't have a lot of time to look into stuff, but at least some of the recap videos and things, everyone's kind of sort of like, makes so much sense for the Cubs. Not sure why the Mariners did this deal, but they love it from the Cubs standpoint. So at least that reaction's been good from the, you know, quote unquote professional talking heads.
But boy, Vogelbach appeared to really be on a roll this season with the Iowa Cubs. He hit 16 home runs so far already, and his OBP is 425.
Yeah.
Wow. So dude's tearing it up down there. He is a very attractive bat for an American League team. The other guy that the Cubs acquired in this trade, Jordan Pries, he was a 30th round pick of the Mariners back in 2011. It's kind of no big deal. John Arguello today called him a similar pitcher to Blackburn. Just kind of a middle reliever, a depth arm is what he said. Pries has Dan Heron-esque velocity on his fastball. and kind of average secondary pitches. So it's he's been between double A and triple A this season. So just kind of pitching depth, really. They're getting a guy similar to the guy that they sent off in Blackburn. So that's Jordan Pries.
So it's basically Vogelbach for Montgomery.
Yeah.
as far as we're concerned.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned, Andy, how much Vogelbach was tearing it up, and at the start of this conversation, you kind of hinted that you thought maybe Vogelbach would have a bigger return. Is that kind of what you thought? Or, I mean, you mentioned a bigger trade, I think.
Maybe a bigger return, but then maybe just a part of a trade with more moving pieces.
Yeah. I think you can look at Vogelbach's numbers, and they are impressive. I think that, like, especially as far as the rumors with the potential trade with the Yankees, you know, it was that the Yankees wanted Schwarber and, you know, like, oh, here's Schwarber light. And I really think that, like, Vogelbach and Schwarber are in two different leagues, literally and figuratively. I just think that Vogelbach is not Kyle Schwarber, and I really like Vogelbach. I think he even as far, you know, when we saw him at low A, he took very disciplined at bats. He worked the count. I mean, he was just a really kind of mature batter even at a young age. But I think that he doesn't Vogelbach is not necessarily somebody that he can only play one position other than DH, and that's first base. And I've watched him for the last, what, 3 or 4 years, and he's never really seemed to improve that much at first base. I watched when I was at spring training last year, they were working on very elementary first base drills with him, which they, even the major league players, do a lot of those elementary drills, but he did not look good. And it's not really for one of the things I really like about Vogelbach is I think that he is a competitor. I think he works really hard. And when I saw him in low A, he looked like he was working really hard to get better at first base. And it just kind of never was happening. And I don't know if it has to do with his body type that he has, or just, you know, as far as his glove work goes, footwork.
He was never in show choir, so right. Doesn't, you know, he's not quite as much of a twinkle toes as Schwarber is.
Yes. There's your marginal analysis for the episode. I just I like the move, and I think I kind of agree with you that I kind of, like, for some reason expected it him to be part of a bigger move. But after this happened and I kind of thought about it for a few minutes, I thought it made a lot of sense. And I think the Cubs didn't really there. I think the Cubs wanted to use Schwarber however they could at this trading deadline. I don't think there was any reason for them to hold on to him for another season. And I think in a way it's kind of doing him, you know, doing the right thing by him, because I think he's kind of proven by how he's performing at AAA that he is ready for the big leagues. And short of just coming up in September and being there to pinch hit every once in a while, there was really no other way for the Cubs to use him. So,
and then just another comment on the trade deadline in general. People are kind of losing their crap today because Theo said something. He said, we haven't touched the prospects that were potentially going to move in bigger deals. And so a lot of people took that to mean, oh, well, you know, in the next week, expect some crazy stuff to happen. But no, I mean, that could be the off season.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah, sure. They could make some more moves, and I would expect them to make some more, you know, another move at least before the trade deadline. But that, like, that statement is so vague.
Yes.
But then, yeah. And people are just taking and running with it, like something crazy is going to go down in the next week.
But I think the kind of the other interesting thing is that this gives you a bit of insurance against the potential that maybe one of the blockbuster deals that they've been, you know, suspected to make, like an Andrew Miller or even a Chapman move with the Yankees. Like, the Yankees don't have to trade them. They could hold on to at least Miller, which is the more attractive one of the two to me. And so if that deal doesn't go through, you've at least padded yourself a little bit with this trade. You got your lefty reliever that, so you don't get Miller, but at least you did something.
Yeah. And it's kind of interesting because it's not necessarily like stuff wise, but as far as role wise, it's kind of like, this is the lefty Adam Warren. And I think the Cubs really needed another lefty. Obviously, we've been talking about that for quite a while, and the Cubs needed some bullpen help, and it's really nice to have a guy that you could stretch out if you need to, and he's kind of proven himself as a starter. So,
a lefty that apparently can strike people out too.
Yeah, as I was just gonna say, he makes more sense as that if you do have to use him as that lefty specialist than Travis Wood, just because. Yeah. I don't know. Wood is just such a weird character in the bullpen. We've talked about this before. Like, he doesn't fit that loogie role.
No. Anything else you guys want to say about this trade?
No, let's move on.
So, no. Jake is back to being Jake, and I would say that the extended break was good for Jake.
Yeah, it's cool that you guys got to see at least that in person, even though the rest of it was pretty frustrating. But I think even Jake was pretty happy with himself after the game. I think he said something about, like, that's more like it, something along those lines. But yeah, he was back to being vintage Jake and was able to go 7 innings, giving up 5 hits and just 1 run, walked 1 and had 8 strikeouts. So that's vintage Jake for us, and good to see him back. And the other sort of even more positive is that for the first 4 innings, he was, like, nearly perfect. He gave up just the 1 hit. And then sort of things faded from there, but we're still pretty good. So, yeah, it's nice to have him back. And, you know, he's a lot more aggressive like he had been before. A lot of first pitch strikes that got him ahead in counts. The command looked really good. 25 of his first 27 pitchers were strikes, which... You know, now that we're sort of in the stat era of everything being tracked, the ESPN stats, that Twitter said that's the fastest anybody's ever gotten to 25 strikes is 27 pitches. So,
wow,
there's a plus.
Yeah, Corey looked
this
up
this year, I should say.
Corey and I looked up and saw that on the board, and I did a double take on that. Yeah. He's just pounding the zone.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, you know, it's. Like you said, he's back to being the way he was, at least for the start. And if he keeps this up, then he'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm curious what you guys think, but I kind of like the idea that he was pulled a little bit early.
One other note. I did write down, too, that he got through those seven innings with just 85 pitches.
Yeah, so did it bother you guys that he was pulled at that point? It kind of surprised me at the time, being in the ballpark, especially, I mean, so he was supposed to bat first in the seventh, right? He went, and they brought in Baez to pinch hit. And I kind of thought, wow, that's kind of funny because, I mean, Arrieta's a good hitter, and it seemed like he maybe still had a little bit left. But then as I kind of thought about it and I looked at it today, his velocity was dropping in those last two innings, starting to drop off. And really, he did, in a way, struggle those last two innings. So in the sixth, Reyes led off with a triple. And at that point, a triple, no outs. All it's going to take is a sacrifice fly, which – most teams can do. The Cubs weren't able to do that last night, but you know, and then he induced two ground balls after that, and then in the seventh he gave up the leadoff single to Walker, and then with two outs a single to Rivera, and he struck out Diazo, so stranded two. But you could kind of tell that the Mets batters were getting a better read, and with his velocity declining a bit, I don't see any reason not to get him out of there. And, you know, just in those two innings, it just seemed like the Mets were getting bats on the ball. And in a game like that, I mean, you have to have faith in your bullpen in those close games and coming after, you know, long rest. And you don't really want to, like, undo everything that you just kind of – all the rest that you gave him by leaning on him too heavily. So I liked the idea of pulling him.
Yeah.
Plus the idea of being able to lead off the inning with Javi too had to have been attractive on top of all that other stuff as well. You know, doing anything you can to try to scratch out a couple more runs to get the W.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with all of the above.
Yeah. So let's get to the I guess what plagued that game. And has other games. And the thing that stood out the most is the Cubs' inability to hit with runners in scoring position.
Yeah, and we listened to some talk radio on the way home. That was kind of driving you nuts, Corey, just the people calling in, going crazy about stuff like that. And there was a lot about Rondon, too. So the Cubs are batting .244 with runners in scoring position. And that's good enough for 10th in the National League out of 15. And so that doesn't look too good. However, the Cubs are second in the number of at bats, with runners in scoring position at 852. So they've encountered that situation more than most other NL teams. For example, the Mets have only had 646 at bats with runners in scoring position. The Cardinals have the best average with runners in scoring position, but they've had 94 fewer at bats with runners in scoring position than the Cubs have had. The Cubs are just getting guys on base more than, and getting them to scoring position as well, more than most other NL teams. So that's just something to consider when you hear that their average with runners in scoring position isn't as good as the Cardinals or whatever, you know, insert other team here. Rizzo is the team leader in batting average with runners in scoring position at 358. Wow. And with a 1.213 OPS.
Jeez, that's crazy.
He has eight homers too.
Was Rizzo better?
So that's pretty incredible. The guys that are kind of struggling in the, you know, this type of a situation are the names you would kind of expect. You know, Hayward's at 205. Zobrist is at 211. There are a couple others that are a little low, like Montero and Baez, surprisingly, I guess. I just thought that was interesting that the Cubs have actually had runners in scoring position a lot more than other teams.
Yeah, and I'm kind of curious, and I haven't looked any of this up, but you know, there was that stretch of 10 or 15 games where they were just horrific. I think it was one of the scary stats where they were hitting like 100 with scoring in scoring position. And So I wonder if you, well, it's easy to make your stats better by excluding bad stretches, but like they were a lot better early. Then they got really bad, so bad that it drew all the numbers down. And then so you look at the averages and they're pretty middle of the pack. So I wonder, I don't know where I'm going with this, but you know what I'm saying? Well, like it's either like they've been all or nothing.
Right.
This season. It's like the beginning they were fine. Now they're horrible.
But guess
maybe
what?
They're kind of on the uptick.
Like that's what baseball is.
Uh-huh.
In almost every facet of the game, that's what baseball is. Is that sometimes things just click and sometimes it just seems like you can't buy whatever it is that you're trying to do. So I think that's why you look at things over the course of a season, and that's why you don't. I think that's why you have to look at things as the full sample size. I don't think you can say, oh, well, in the last whatever, this is what their either record is, you know, in the last this many games, and so that's what this team is, or they are not hitting with runners in scoring position over this amount of time, when really chances are they're probably not doing too much different. It's just the result is different. And it's a roller coaster, and it's going to go up and down. It's rarely flat all the way across.
Man, flat roller coasters suck.
The worst.
But it was frustrating in that game, though, in Tuesday's game, other than just because we were in the ballpark. I mean, especially against a guy like Syndergaard. You know, in the first inning, the Cubs had runners on second and third. Both of them advanced to those bases on a wild pitch. It seemed like the Cubs maybe had Syndergaard on his heels a bit, and especially with both of those guys, two hits led off the game. And then with two outs, they had that wild pitch to put them in scoring position, and nothing came of it. In the second inning, again, two hits to start the inning, Hayward single and a Russell double. And then Montero hits into the fielder's choice, and the Mets, that was when the Mets got Hayward in a rundown, which was frustrating to me because I found it very frustrating that Russell was not standing on third base at the end of that play, because Hayward was dead in the water. And so you might as well go ahead and go to third base. Russell should have, but Arrieta struck out, Listella walked, and then Bryant flied out to end the inning. I guess it wouldn't have made any difference, but it seemed like, and I, you know, Andy, you and I kind of talked about it at the time. It's like, you know, those wasted opportunities right there. right there. Kind of allowed Syndergaard to get into a groove. And it's like, you know, with pitchers like Syndergaard, you just have to jump on them when you can. You have to take advantage of mistakes. And if you don't take advantage of mistakes, that's when they're going to get in a groove. And really, that's what happened. The run that Contreras scored was a fluke, you know, with the wild pitch and then a catcher throwing error. But from the third inning till the eighth inning, the Cubs never sent more than four guys to the plate in any inning. And in that time, they had three hits and a walk in five innings. And so each of the times a Cub got on base, it was just an isolated incident. And they didn't string anything together at all. And so I guess I say that just to point out that they really wasted some great opportunities at the beginning of the game. And when they weren't able to take advantage of them, Syndergaard kind of got locked in. And it's going to be hard to scratch out runs when you let a guy like that get into a groove.
And I was actually a little bit surprised that Syndergaard was, they let him go that far, given some of his issues lately. I mean, he threw 105 pitches.
Yeah.
But only went 5.2 innings. Like, they were making him work, but,
sure,
you know, he was still good. And I sort of thought, oh, you know, if they're making him throw this many pitches, they might get him out of there in four. But they just let him ride. And yeah, like you said, it sort of flipped the momentum when every time they weren't able to cash in anything, it just sort of.
Yeah. But, you know,
I was eager to, for them to get to the bullpen and then, you know, thinking, well, you know, the seventh and eighth inning guys, these will be prime opportunities for them to score some runs. And it just didn't happen. And then you had the whole Familia fiasco in the ninth inning, but,
I don't even want to talk about it.
Just a frustrating game all around. And so that's what made today's game just kind of freshened my spirits.
Yeah. Yep. And that's what baseball, that's why they play every day, just to make us fans feel better after a crummy game. So staying on a crummy topic, I guess, in a way, I think that Hector Rondon has blown four saves this season, and I have seen three of them in person. I've been to five Cubs games this year, and I've seen three blown saves from Hector Rondon. So my knee-jerk reaction is Rondon isn't the guy. But then the more I think about it, I think he's as much of the guy as he was last year. And I don't know if anyone else can be the guy any better than Rondon, except maybe Aroldis Chapman. But do we want the Cubs to go down that road? I don't think most of us do. So I'm really trying to keep like a level head about Rondon, and being the closer is a tough thing. And not only do you frequently come in the most high pressure moments and you have very little room for error, but starters can struggle and kind of work their way out of it, either in that same game or in their next outing or whatever. Closers don't, well, especially as far as working your way out of it in the game, closers don't get that luxury. Lester can go out there and in the first inning give up his honorary solo home run and kind of work his way back into the game and be fine. But a closer does not have that luxury. And I think to be a closer, obviously, you have to have a short memory. And I can't really say exactly what is wrong with Rondon, if there is anything wrong at all with him. He seemed to be really relying on his off-speed stuff on Tuesday. And he does that occasionally. So because he does that occasionally, it kind of makes me wonder if it had something to do with scouting on the Mets and doing that intentionally. It seems like he has a lot of trouble with two outs. And in the ninth on Tuesday, he had guys on first and second with two outs, and then he gave up a base hit to Rivera, the catcher, hitting in the eighth spot, which is frustrating. Which, if I remember right, it was the catcher hitting in the eighth spot that caused him to blow the game in Cincinnati. So maybe that's his thing. He just doesn't pitch well to the catchers in the eighth spot.
Isn't like two outs to the opposing pitcher?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Or catcher.
Catcher, sorry. Yeah. So it's really kind of difficult to nail down what's wrong with Rondon. Like I said, if there is anything at all, I think when you're talking about closers, even half of the season is a pretty small sample size. I looked at how he did with runners in scoring position with two outs, and batters are hitting 273 off of him, which is higher than you would want for a closer, because a base hit with a runner in scoring position is a run more times than not. So that seems pretty high for a closer. But then you see that it's 11 at bats and he's given up three hits. So that's a pretty small sample size. I think Rondon has been, I'm just kind of throwing out all of my thoughts on Rondon, so feel free to interrupt me at any time. I think that he's been in a unique situation this year. He's a closer that didn't get many opportunities in the first few months of the season to actually close games. And so here's what I decided to do. I decided I couldn't really judge him based on a few poor pitches or lucky hits, because I think that's what we do with closers, really, is one bad outing, one bad pitch makes you think the guy is terrible. So if you look at relief pitchers with at least 16 saves, he has 16, which is low, but then again, you know, he really hasn't had, if you compare him to the best closers in the game, they obviously have more, but they've had more save opportunities. So he has 16 saves. And if you sort by ERA plus, Hector Rondon is number 7. He's ahead of Aroldis Chapman. Chapman has, I think, 5 or 6 fewer games. If you sort it by FIP, he is number 4 in all of baseball, right behind Aroldis Chapman. So I guess after taking a few deep breaths this morning, after last night's game, I do believe that Rondon can be the guy for the Cubs. And am I opposed to the Cubs going and getting someone better? Not at all. I'm not sure who that person is if it's not Chapman. And if you look
at... I will say this. Let me interject here, Corey.
Yeah,
is that
please do.
The Cubs have one relief pitcher on the roster who has converted 100% of his save opportunities, and that is Clayton Richard. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Well, thanks
there
for that.
There could be a guy already on the staff.
Right. I think if you look at the top relievers in the game, for the most part, they are on teams that are potentially in the playoffs. You're not going to get those guys. And so if you're not going to get an elite closer, I think you take the proven, really, you know, pretty damn good guy, and that's who they have. And I think you take the guy with the 1.85 ERA, and you take the guy with a 34% strikeout rate, and you take the guy with a 3% walk rate. And so that's what he is. And I think he is the guy. But I'm curious what you guys think about this situation. And are you comfortable with Rondon being the closer from here on out in 2016?
Well, yeah. I mean, I pretty much agree with everything you said. I mean, let's let the guys see some more opportunities, you know, before we write him off. He's got pretty good numbers, like you said and pointed out. And so I'm willing to give him another chance. Now, some people would argue like the Cubs can't afford to let him fail that much more. And I see that point of view. I'm just saying, like, let's give him a few, you know, some more opportunities before. I think they can afford it to let it ride longer and see how he does.
Yeah, I kind of like Corey's earlier description of, as you're kind of going through the numbers of like, the ERA and the opponent batting average, stuff like that. It's like, this is the guy that people would be clamoring for you to trade for.
Right.
Maybe if he did have a couple of blown saves, but if Rondon were on another team that was losing, people would be saying, we need to get that guy. But when he's with the Cubs and he blows a couple saves and or doesn't perform well in a non-save situation, I think you're right that it's easy to attack him. Because across the board, his numbers look good, his stuff looks good. He's had a bad couple of outings. So I think for now I'm comfortable with it.
But can I jump in and just say too that while he's had a couple of bad outings, like they're not really they've all been in the last like 3 weeks, it feels like, but they haven't been, it's not like every game he goes out there and doesn't look good. It's just that it's just going to happen. And this is the thing where like, I think so many Cubs fans, I mean, Andy, you mentioned you and I listened to sports talk radio on the way home. We listened to the score last night. And it's like fans, I think a lot of fans have forgotten that really good baseball teams still look bad at times and still lose. And individual players still screw up sometimes and have not good games. And that doesn't mean the team is bad. It doesn't mean that player needs to be thrown aside or replaced. It just means that that's baseball.
You know, Len Casper had a great tweet last night about this. And I'm going to kind of stall here for a second while I find it. But he said that losing stinks and it's aggravating, but every loss isn't some exposure of a flaw. You can think it is, but it's not.
Yeah.
Yep. Sometimes, you know, a guy just has a bad night, and it doesn't mean that, oh, we have a closer crisis or something like that. I mean, didn't Rondon pitch a great clean inning, his appearance right before last night's?
Well, see, that's just it, is like, you don't remember that.
You know, right. I mean?
You remember the ugly, where he had two outs and two guys on and gave up a base hit and the Cubs lost the game because of it. That's what stands out. That's what you remember. You don't remember the times that he goes in there and is pretty locked down and just does what he's supposed to do. So,
yeah.
I mean, we haven't really talked about it that much, but since we are here in the like trading period, any thoughts on Chapman, the Cubs? I mean, I don't see any other, I think he's the only closer and like, you know, Andrew Miller and Chapman are the two biggest bullpen guys I think they could go get. But since we're on the topic of a closer, what are your thoughts on Chapman?
Well, we had a little discussion about this last night, but I just think, set aside like how great of a pitcher he is, I don't think the Cubs need that little pocket of poison in the clubhouse. They have history with him. He has a little bit of a checkered past. I mean, I just don't care for the idea of him being on this team with this team that I've come to know and love.
Yeah, I'm 100% in agreement. I don't think any of us need to prove or disprove what a great pitcher he is. On the field, he's amazing, but the other stuff bothers me so much that I just don't, it just doesn't feel like a good fit.
Yeah.
Not even like not a good fit a little bit, just this could be horrible. Like,
yeah,
this could
be horrible. Corey threw this out there last night. Let me just put words in your mouth here, Corey.
You'll be more concise than I will be. So go ahead.
No, not necessarily. I mean, but you actually painted a picture of the Cubs winning the World Series and Chapman being the iconic like image of the celebration as he closed out the game and got the save. And you know, how does that make the your bile feel?
Yeah. And actually I didn't come up with that. I heard Brett and Sahadev talk about that on Limited Range. I want to make sure I give them credit for that visual. Oh, right. You can blame them for that visual, not me.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
But and that's one thing. I try, and I know I am probably guilty of this too, but when it comes to the clubhouse stuff, I would say more likely than not, he probably can be a clubhouse cancer and he is a really crummy dude, but I don't know that for certain. I mean, I know that he's a really crummy dude based on things that have happened in the last year, but I don't know necessarily that he's bad for a clubhouse. I really don't know that. And I would prefer that Aroldis Chapman is not on this team. I would love to have his arm on this team. If we can just trade for his arm and like his head can stay in New York, that'd be all right. But I guess it's one of those things where like I kind of would trust the front office to know what impact he could or, you know, might or might not have. If he is a I would think that if current Cubs players did not have an opinion one way or the other on Aroldis Chapman, I think that winning makes everybody probably better in the clubhouse. And that's something that Chapman wasn't experiencing there at the end with the Reds. So I'm just looking at like clubhouse stuff. I'm not looking at his things that have happened at home and all that. So right. I guess I don't know. I can't really say with certainty that he is bad for a clubhouse. I think he probably is, but I don't know for sure. So I think at this point, like if the Cubs did trade for him, I'm going to trust that the front office is not. I know that they really value the character of their players, and I think that they really value clubhouse morale and just the climate of the clubhouse. And so,
from the little I saw about Montgomery, he seems to be another one of those guys that seems to be one of the good guys in the game. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
Yeah. So, I mean, if this front office went out and got Chapman, would that change your opinion at all?
Oh, yeah, well, I think it would, because I do feel like I trust them and trust their judgment. So I feel like it would perhaps change my opinion of the situation.
Yeah, me too, because I mean, call it blind faith or whatever you want to call it, but I think they would do enough homework to say he might not be the best dude to hang out with after the game, but he's not going to blow up the clubhouse. That would be my, I have enough faith in them to figure that part out.
Yeah. Yeah. The visual of him celebrating, like striking out the third out at the end of a world, you know, a clinching moment in the World Series, that does make me sick to my stomach. And instead, what I would like to visualize, but
you would forget it pretty quickly.
I would, because I would be celebrating on my own and exactly. I wouldn't really care. What I would like to see is Jason Hayward catching a pop-up that's the third out, because that would drive Cardinals fans crazy. So, and it would drive some Cubs fans crazy. So,
John Lackey starts. Yes. Goes eight. Aroldis Chapman comes in for the save. Final out to Jason Hayward. There's your picture right there.
Yeah, maybe a ground out from like Brian at third over to Rizzo. You know, even though, you know, Piscotty is by far a better baseball player than Chris Bryant, but.
And Randall Grichuk.
Yeah, Grichuk. Triple A Grichuk.
So, yeah, I don't know. I just felt like we kind of hadn't really had reason to talk about Rondon. And I think he kind of like, especially last night, kind of forced himself into our conversation on the way home, Andy. I think we kind of talked through a lot of this stuff on our drive back from Chicago. So I felt it was worth mentioning here on the podcast. So, Andy, do you have a Rube Waddell story for us?
Yeah, I do. Probably kind of coming to the end a little bit of these stories, but there's still a few more. And so I wanted to talk on this podcast about Rube's lion incident. I think we've alluded to it before. And so I'm going to tell the story of it. So in 1903, Rube did some acting. I don't know if you guys knew that, but he did some acting in a play called The Stain of Guilt. But apparently he left the theater in which his play was showing and went to a nearby theater where there was a Den of Lions exhibition. And so he was recently back with Philadelphia during this time. And so this all happened while he was back in the major leagues. Last week we talked about him pitching for the Cubs, the Orphans at the time. And in between his time with the Cubs and when he was back with Philadelphia, he pitched for like a lot of like farm teams, just like rural baseball teams. In one game, he struck out like, I forget, like 27. Not 27. I don't know. Some crazy number. But anyway, like at this
point, it wasn't more than that. I know that.
No, I know it wasn't more than that. But
back in the era of the editing game.
At any rate, he's back in the big leagues, and then he has this incident with Lions. So this comes from a paper called The Punxsutawney Spirit. And some people have called into question the integrity of these few stories reported by this paper because the play troupe had a publicist that perhaps liked to kind of drum up attention around Rube. But anyway, here's what the paper says. It says, on Tuesday last, he deserted the Stain of Guilt long enough to go over to another theater where a den of lions were being exhibited. Rube walked into the den, picked out the largest one of the bunch, and hit the king of beasts a rap on the jaw that made the brute bowl. It says bowl, not bowl. The lion resented the abuse by sinking his teeth into Rube's left hand, and from the latest accounts, the wound is giving the big pitcher no end of trouble. And so that's it. Apparently he hit a lion and the lion
bit him.
Well, we knew that he had been bitten by a lion because that was that one year where like all that crazy stuff. I mean, his whole lifetime is full of crazy stuff, but there was the one year where he like started out homeless, right? Or living in a bar or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah. The being bit by a lion was bitten by a lion.
He had it coming apparently.
Yeah. So that's it. That's the story.
I like it.
Went in and hit a lion and it bit him.
Why do the Rube stories have to end? Like, surely there's got to be, I don't know.
He died at a fairly young age.
That's true. It is quite a treasure trove of lifetime experiences. So before we wrap things up here, I wanted to let you know that we do have Ivy Envy shirts for sale. And I forget to mention that quite a bit. And you can go to ivmv.com/store. They're normally $15, but I was thinking let's do 20% off. We do 20% off occasionally. And so let's have how about we have the coupon code be Javi? Can we talk about Javi for a second, guys?
We haven't yet. So people are probably wondering, like, oh my gosh, I think we just went through a whole episode without talking about Javi. Nope.
Not only does he get the coupon code, so JAVY, all capital letters, get you, that's a coupon code, 20% off our t-shirts. So Javi, bunted for a base hit in the ninth on Tuesday. Bunted to load the bases, and the infield was in, like, ready for the bunt. He was showing bunt mm-hmm. on, like, the pitches before that. They knew he was going to do it, and he just busted it down to first base. And oh man, I was so happy when he beat that out. That was like the highlight of the game for me, I think. So before today's game, I haven't looked at the stats yet tonight, but before today's game, in the last 30 days, Javi is hitting .310. In the last 7 days, he's hitting .429. And it's actually higher, I think, because he went 2-for-4 today, I believe. So yeah, before today, 7 days, last 7 days, .429. His strikeout rate is 22.5%, almost half of what it was when he came up for the 50-some games in 2014. So here's a stat for you. This is, Kurt, I know we don't do scary stats, but I'm going to kind of jump in with one if that's all right. We don't do them on the midweek episode, but 44.5% of Javi's bunts are base hits. So wow. I could make our t-shirt discount 44.5%, but I'm going to do 20 instead. So you can go to ivmv.com/store and use the promo code Javi.
Wow, 44%. That's
44.5, Kurt.
Well, you, I mean, that he might as well just bunt every time. The devil hit number 400. He would eventually bunt a home run.
I believe he could. I'll just say that. I believe he could.
Bunt bat, he has the best bunt bat speed in all of baseball.
Bum bip. What's his bum bip?
Oh, jeez.
All right. So that'll do it for this episode, which was brought to you by all of our Patreon supporters. We have two new contributors to thank on this episode, Seth from Chicago and Michael from San Francisco, California. Michael comes in at the Ryan Sandberg level, which is a Hall of Fame level. So thanks to Seth and Michael. If you like what we're doing here at IVMV, your support on Patreon helps us keep things going. This week you got Kurt some new headphones. You're getting those tomorrow, right, Kurt?
Yeah.
Yep.
Send them over, Amazon.
Yeah. So it helps us pay for our hosting and services. It helps us with live events and everything like that. And all of our Patreon money that we've brought in has gone right back into the podcast. And there's perks for you to receive, stickers, posters, pint glasses, and more. So you can learn more at patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. Or you can go to IVMV.com, and there is a Patreon link on the right side of the page. So the Cubs head to Milwaukee, and so do we. We will see some of you on Saturday. I can't wait. It's going to be a blast. So thank you for downloading and listening. And until Sunday night, go Cubs.